Okay. The topic that we're going to discuss this morning, in the little time that we have, is going to be some of the issues that relate to the Heter Mechira, selling Eretz Yisrael in order to get circumvent, would be the best way to say it, requirements, the chiyuvim, the obligations, as well as some of the prohibitions, some of the Yisurim, in connection with Shemitah. Of course, this is a issue. This is very controversial in our time, and it was controversial in the 19th century when the history of this topic began. Eretz Yisrael in the 19th century began to become more populated with an influx of people from Europe, which would of course provide the context and background for what ultimately became the Dinat Yisrael. But already in that period, the question of what to do during the Shemitah year was obviously a thorny issue, and one which provoked all sorts of controversy. The debate was an intense one, which involved the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of its times. People like Rav Yitzchak Elchanan and Rav Yosef Engel and Rav Kook on one side, those who supported what's known as the Heter Mechira, against equally people of equal stature, obviously, Beis Halevi and the Netziv and others who strongly opposed it. It's an issue which is very emotional in that here you had a situation where Klal Yisrael was beginning to repopulate, resettle Eretz Yisrael, and obviously that is something which represents a dream, attaining that aspiration which we pray for in our tefillos all the time. The implications of resettling Eretz Yisrael, reestablishing it as the center of life in Jewish people, are obvious and very emotional, halachically emotional as well. And at the same time, that was threatened by the prohibitive requirements of what otherwise is an ideal, namely Shemitah. After all, in the Shemitah year, you're not allowed to do avodas hakarka, specifically Zriya and Zmira and Katsira and Betsira, meaning the sowing and the pruning and the threshing, harvesting, basic agricultural activities are prohibited on Shnas HaShmita. And also there are all sorts of limitations in terms of Peros Shviyas as a result of Kedushas Shviyas. It's an Isur Skora, one's not allowed to, you can't have business as usual, certainly, with Peros Shviyas and sending Peros Shviyas out of the country. Kutzlarts is an issue, and the involvement of non-Jews is an issue, and the requirement of Kedusha and handling even the Peros after they've been eaten, and of course other such issues, the problem of Biur. All of these imposed severe challenges on the fledgling population of what was then called the Yishuv. Even if it would have been easy to come up with some sort of agreed upon mechanism to circumvent Yisurei Shviyas, that was only part of the problem, because clearly the ideal is to observe Shemitah and to observe it fully. The Torah speaks about Shemitah, hopefully we'll get back to this later on, as Shabbos Haaretz, just like if it would be conceivable, it isn't, I should make clear. But if it had been conceivable to circumvent Shabbos, certainly none of us would want to do it, even if it could be accomplished legally. Shabbos is the foundation of our week. We count the days of Shabbos, we count the days of the week, because in a way that revolves around and therefore accentuates the central role of Shabbos. Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, the famous comment of the Ramban in several places, literally our sense of time revolves around Shabbos. Shabbos is a time in which we recharge our spiritual batteries. It's almost inconceivable that we would have any kind of self-image as a people if somehow, even if we could do it legally, we were to circumvent Shabbos in our lives. And so too, ideally, when Torah speaks in Parshas Bahar about Shabbos Haaretz, about Shemitah being a Shabbos, and it's not the phrase that is used once, it's a phrase that that frequents the context of Shviyas. We constantly speak about it as a Shabbos in that Parsha. And in all the Parshios that refer to Shnas HaShemitah, we find references to Shabbos or transition from one to the other. With the psukim that we'll read next week in Parshas Mishpatim represent a transition in two psukim that seem to have nothing to do with each other, back to back, Shemitah and Shabbos. This is true in Parshas Bahar, it's true in the Chukosai. Sifra has a very famous comment where they say, maybe you would have thought, and again, shouldn't take it too seriously, it's only interesting as far as it goes, the reason that I'm trying to accentuate it, maybe you would have thought that in the Shemitah year, one wouldn't have to observe Shabbos, Kamash Malon, that Shabbos, Shviyas, these are things that are compatible, and of course one is not an excuse in any way to undermine the other. Why would anybody even think that Shabbos comes every single week, which is Kavul v'kaima misheshes yivei breishes, why would anybody think that that is affected, ki huzeh, by Shabbos Haaretz, by the Shemitah year? Obviously because Shabbos and Shemitah share many of the same themes, and that's an important principle. The Rishonim were of the opinion that the principle that we find by Shabbos, which is that there is chiluk malachos, that every individual malacha constitutes a separate violation. We don't say this by Yom Tov. The Gemara in Makos and Pesachim distinguishes between Shabbos and Yom Tov. When it comes to Yom Tov, all the malachos that apply are considered to be applications of the same basic principle. When it comes to Shabbos, chiluk malachos. If you do Zoreya and Koresh and Kotzer and Ma'amer and Dosh, and you do them Helabacha the Shinkas Malacha, Yediyas HaShabbos, so you'll bring a separate carbon for each and every one. That's the principle of Chiluk Malachos. Our Sama Shon will believe that the basic concept of Chiluk Malachos applies to Shviyas as well as to Shabbos, even though it doesn't apply to Yom Tov. Again, underscoring that there is this similar idea, this parallel idea, not just a linguistic connection, but that Shabbos and Shviyas, we really mean very literally that they are connected. And in this sense, it's clear that the Shemitah year, Shabbos Haaretz, is really a critical part of the way that we look at Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Again, the Chazal tell us, Shelo Ichnasti, Hosam, the Rebbe Shalom says, I didn't allow Klal Yisrael to enter the Eretz Yisrael, Ela Menashe, Kablo Aleihem, Mitzvahs, Shviyas, Medrash HaGadol and Parshas Bahar. There are other Chazals also, which imply that, really, just like, as we said before, from a calendar point of view, Shabbos is the center around which everything in the week revolves. So too, when it comes to Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, Shviyas is really the foundational principle around which everything else operates. So just as had been conceivable, it still would have been inconceivable for us to try to circumvent the rules of Shabbos once a week, so too, ideally, we would want to embrace enthusiastically and fully all aspects of Shviyas, of Shabbos Haaretz, for all the themes and all the values that it projects. Like Shabbos, Shviyas every week, every other 7 years, reminds us that the Ribono Shalom, Kili Kol Haaretz, is the master of the land and not us. Like Shabbos, the concept of working all week is redeemed in a way by the resting on Shabbos and the focus on spiritual matters. It gives context to, and therefore spiritual value to, the activities of the day of the week. So too, Shnas HaShemitah, when we say Shabbos Haaretz, as I'll say there also, Shabbos Haaretz L'shma, not just because, you know, agriculturally it might be conducive to, you know, to better harvests in the future, but L'shem Shabbos Haaretz, principle of establishing ki li ha'aretz li kedushas ha'aretz. So too, that idea justifies, redeems, and invests kedusha in the way in which we relate to working the land, living on the land, all the rest of the years of the cycle of Shemitah. Moreover, the fact is that the Shemitah began only 7 years after the Yerusha, the Yeshiva, the Yerusha and the Chalukah of Eretz Yisrael. When they first entered into Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of Chalo began immediately, but the mitzvah of Shemitah, for example, was delayed. It was delayed until the concept of individual ownership could be established and asserted. In a way, you can't have Shemitah unless you have individual ownership. But I think that one could argue, at least I'll make the argument, that in one respect, one of the most important themes of Shvius is a way, is in a way the idea of hefker on Shvius, which is a little bit different than the regular concept of hefker. But I think the concept of hefker in Shvius revisits the status of Klal Yisrael before Yerusha v'Chaluka. In other words, when Klal Yisrael first entered Eretz Yisrael, so they were a collective, single unit. Chala began immediately. Maybe for the same reason that there's a concept of Pias Kulchem, which we'll talk about soon, as it applies to Chala. All of Klal Yisrael, or Rove Klal Yisrael, had to be involved in that Aliyah and entering Eretz Yisrael. And as a collective, they took hold of the land, and the mitzvah of Chala began. But the idea of Shemitah is that once there was individual ownership, so in a way, every 7 years, we go back to the notion of collective ownership, the total integrated bailus of Klal Yisrael. So whether it's the expression of our dependence upon the Ribono Shel Olam, whether it's the focal point which invests sanctity in everything that we do the other years, the Shabbos theme, in both of those respects, or it's the idea of collective Klal Yisrael, the unity of Klal Yisrael, and many other themes of Shemitah, it's clear that the values that are expressed in the dinim of Shemitah are values that are crucial for our Weltanschauung as a people, as individuals, and as a collective. And therefore, the idea that return to Eretz Yisrael, reestablishing our presence there, which again, meant that we encountered these challenges, that the idea that that would be met with a response that would circumvent these values, which are at the core of the ideal of return itself, constitutes, obviously, a very unhappy situation. Therefore, the poskim who dealt with these questions really have to deal with the issue on three different levels. And that's what I just want to relate to, you know, at least the survey of some of the issues today. Number one, they had to figure out whether or not it was permissible to take the kind of steps that would trigger a proper legal circumvention, which in this case means, was it permissible to sell land of Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews based on the principle of Yesh Kinyan Akum L'Hafkiyah Mikdushas Haaretz, that the ownership of a non-Jew would neutralize the sanctity of the land and therefore preclude imposing the dinim of Shvius? Is such a sale permissible according to halacha? That's one issue. Second question is, even if the sale is permissible, does it have the desired effect? In other words, does it really accomplish fully neutralizing the dine shvita? This is a legal circumvention. Maybe you can take you can accomplish the mechanism. Does it achieve the goal? And thirdly, the issue that I just began with, which is often overlooked, at least glossed over, and that is the question of the desirability to do so. After all, you wouldn't want to avoid the mitzvah of Shvius. One of the reasons that living in Eretz Yisrael is as unique as it is because it allows us to fully realize the potential of mitzvah Shvius Baretz. And as I've made a very brief case, in particular, the role of Shvius is very central to that aspiration. So these are really three different issues that the Gedolim had to deal with then, and we have to contend with today. should be noted that there's an added element even beyond the emotionally wrenching issues that I briefly alluded to in terms of circumventing the laws and therefore, by extension, the values of Shemitah. And that is that the Torah itself speaks about Shemitah in a way that is singular, and both in positive and negative terms. The Torah speaks about a special haftaka when it comes to Shemitah, the Pesukim in Vayikra. Actually, there's a quote somewhere. Torah Shemitah is a good thing, too. The Pesukim in Vayikra, Perek Chafei, speak about special haftaka. After all, even in the best of circumstances, Shemitah is always going to be is always going to be something that is challenging just by its nature. V'chitom remando chal b'shana shviyis ein lo nizra v'lo ne'asaf v'tvuaseinu v'tzivisiyas birchasi lachem b'shana shishis v'asos v'satvua v'shlosh hashanim v'zraten eis hashana shviyis v'achaltem ratvua yashan ad hashana shviyis ad vo tvuasa tochu yashan. And then the Torah continues, Va'aretz lo timachel etzmisus, which is important for us too, Ki li ha'aretz, ki geir mitol shavim atem imadid, u'b'chol eretz akuzaschem, ge'ulat kitnu la'aretz. These are psukim in Parshas Bahar, which basically address the financial concern which is structured in to the year of Shemitah. Namely, if we don't do the work, and our limitations in what we can sell, and how we can relate to the payrolls, how are we going to survive? And in the time of the Torah, obviously, the world was an agricultural economy, and the issues were very, very acute. It's not only that, we also find this on the other level, and that is in terms of the klala. The Torah also tells us that Haz tirtzeh ha'aretz v'shat tzoseha. The psukim later on, in Perek Chavav, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, also in Vayikra, of course in the Chukosai, where the Torah says that the reason for our galus, Hashimosi ani es haaretz, v'shamba aleha oybechem, hayoshim ba, these are the very terrifying psukim in Parshas Chukosai, v'yeshem, ezarev agayim, v'harikosi achrechem charev, v'harisar tzuchem shimama v'arechem yu karva. Oz tirtzeh ha'aretz es shab soseha kol yimei ha'shama v'yaten v'eretz oyvechem oz tishbas ha'aretz v'yirtzas es shab soseha kol yimei ha'shama tishbos, etc. Chazal elaborate, but basically they understand these psukim to be saying that the amount of time that you're going to be in galus, implying that the odesh of galus is very much connected to the fact that you've neglected the opportunity of Shemitah. So again, when you consider, you know, you have the financial hardship, the attempt to establish the resettlement of Eretz Yisrael, you know, it encounters a terrible economic, which is more than an economic challenge, a challenge to the existence of that fledgling issue. So normally you would say, well, you have, you know, certain halakhic ideals, and they are opposed by haftacha in the Torah. I'm sorry, they're opposed by ideals of the Torah, Shabbos Haaretz, etc. But what I'm trying to add here is, this is very much reflected in the literature about the Hetzer Mechira, that in addition to that, you have a special haftacha, and you have a special klala, if you will, that is specifically associated with Shemitah, which says, don't be cavalier about this matter. And it's Siv in his Kuntres, on this whole matter, in the end of Meshuv Davar. So he basically says, I understand the economic plight, and I understand the, you know, the repercussions of keeping Shemitah properly. He says, but I think you have to weigh, you know, which danger is greater. Is the danger of the, you know, apparent economic collapse of the issue, is that more or less of a concern and of a risk, you know, then invoking the psukim, you know, in Parshas Bahar and in Parshas Bechukosai. Again, this was part of the debate on the poskim. There's not a single view on this matter, obviously. Rabbi Yitzchok Kochanan, Rabbi Yosef Engel, and Rav Kook, and many others. strongly advocated that they go ahead with the Hasanbahira. But you should just be aware of what the stakes really were. And therefore, some of the halakhic issues are not blurred by, but are at least informed by some of the emotional halakhic value issues as well. Yeah?
You're saying that the notions of Haaretz HaShem Sosnelah mean that either they do it the heter, the land has to have a shemitah.
That's not so clear. But it's not clear.
I mean,
the argument of the, obviously the arguments of the, the advocates of the Hasan Bechira was that if you violate Shemitah, then this is the klala that will be visited upon. They were denying
violate properly or improperly.
I mean, if you violate, meaning if there is Kedusha Shvias and you ignore it, so then, of course, that's what the psukim are referring to. But if you legally circumvent it for reasons that are, whose motivation isn't just, profit, but is survival and existence, then that won't invoke these clauses. That was the argument. And the Nitziv and others said, when you combine the Haftacha together with the Klala, maybe the point is that you shouldn't even be looking for circumventions, and even if we're not talking about a Klala, but at least you should be aware what the stakes were. And the truth is that the debate between the Matirim and the Osirim was not how important the values of Shemitah are. Everybody agrees about that, how important, how pivotal, how central they are. Nor is it, about whether one should be cavalier about triggering the psukim in Parshas Bechukosah. It was only Machlokas L'Shem Shemayim, passionate on both sides, about what was better for Klal Yisrael when difficult decisions had to be made at that point in history. The revitalization of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael at that particular time, viewed by some as something which required a legal solution. Others felt that the price was too high. It was clearly a machlokas l'shem shemayim in every sense. Which is why the Matirim, the group that allowed the Hetzer Bechira, that advocated for it, always reflected these considerations in their chumos and in their kuntresim. They too spoke about the ideal of Shvius and the need urgently to return to that ideal, even as they allowed the Hetzer. So, for example, they insisted always that the Hetzer be proclaimed as a Horah Shah, as a each time an independent proclamation, which had no implications for the, for the future Shemitah, which would be in the next 7 years, and certainly not beyond that either. Each time it was supposed to be reassessed and supposed to be instituted anew, precisely to make this point that we're not being in any way lenient or cavalier, as I said, about the importance of Shemitah, even if we believe this mechanism is required now and that it is effective, nonetheless we understand that it's a b'di'evet. They always insisted that there be certain parts of Eretz Yisrael, Shalot Tishtakach Torah Shvius, which the full measures of Shvius would be executed and applied. And generally they were mostly machmir for Malachos Daraisa. There are many dinim daraisa in Shvius, and there are more dinim than our drabanim. While they were making on the drabanans, which solved much of the problem in terms of the challenge of allowing the economy to develop, but they insisted at least that we take steps, even extreme steps, to avoid malachos daraisa, because they too understood very well that this was a b'di'evet. In addition to the question of shvius itself, the discussion also includes the role of haramos, circumventions generally, which we find in other areas of halakha, things like mechiras chametz and heteriska, other such circumventions as well. When is it appropriate to try to circumvent the halakha and when not? Okay, so this is just a little bit of background. Now what I'd like to do, not that much time, but to discuss the two bigger issues, halakhic issues, around which this whole controversy revolves. One is is there a prohibition to sell land in Eretz Yisrael under these conditions to a non-Jew or not? That's one issue. And the second issue, does the sale accomplish the goal of circumvention? Does it really neutralize Kedushas Shviyas? Okay. So let's go to the first one very quickly first. The Torah in Parshas Vaschanan, I think I added my Yikra here. I should have asked you for a chumash before, but the Torah in Parshas Vaschanan. Thank you. Perek Zayin, Pasuk Beis, the end of the Parshas Vaschanan, tells us that Kibiyach Hashem Elokecha La'aretz Asher Adav Hashem LeRishna. When you enter into Eretz Yisrael, the Nashal Goyim Rabim Mipanecha Achita Gevgashi Amari Knani Abrizi Avivi Bayavusi Shiva Goyim Rabim Vatsunim Mimecha. So you will encounter all these terribly formidable nations. The Shiva Aladim. When the Sanam Hashem Elokecha Lepanecha B'Yikisam, Baruch Shalom promises us for deserving, right, that he will vanquish them. And then we're obligated to fight them. Lo tikros lehem bris, do not forge any kind of alliance or compact or treaty with them. Velo sechaneim. And this pasuk, velo sechaneim, is very unclear. What does that word mean? We know what lo tikros lehem bris is. We know what hachrein pachrim osam is. What is the word lo sechaneim? It's a word which is very challenging in the Hebrew language. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah discusses this and tells us that it means the following. It actually has three different meanings. The Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, on the Yud Testament base, tells us that Ein Osim Ashitim Avodah Zkachavim, other such things. And then we're told Ein Mochrim Lehem B'Mechuba LaKarka, not allowed to sell real estate in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. Aval mochar hu mishayiktat. Rabbi Huda on there, mochar al menas lakutz. If you sell it on condition that, let's say, they're going to cut down the tree or going to make the mechubar into talush, then you could sell it. But selling mechubar, selling land of Eretz Yisrael, that is prohibited. Gemara says, not immediately. How do you know this? Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina, the Amakra lo sechaneim. They quote this pasuk, this ambiguous term, lo sechaneim, which means lo tite lahem chanaya bekarka. Do not give them an encampment, I guess would be the best way to translate it, in the land of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, hai lo sechaneim mi ba'ilei. We need that pasuk for something else. Na'afi kamar akmada. Lo tite lahem chen. But basically, you're not allowed to exhibit a posture of chayin when it comes to a non-Jew. In chayin, lema kra, the Gemara says, lo sechunim, my lo sechunim, shma min akarti. And the Gemara says, akati ni boile, ha'chem rachmana, lo tite lahem, matana shal chino. Not allowed to give gratuities to a non-Jew. Lo sechunim, in the language of chino. Shma min akarti. So the Gemara says, "Imkei lema kra lo techinim." Because so lo techinim, lo techunim. It says lo techanim. Torah's ingenuity is that the pasuk was written to convey three different dinim. Shma mina kulu. Tanina nahachi lo techanim lo tikan lemchalay bekarka. Davar acha lo techanim lo tikan lemchein. Davar acha lo techanim lo tikan lematnoschi. Okay. So basically, we derive from Lo Sechaneim, that interesting pasuk, three different halachas. Right? Lo Tikun Lem Chein, example, complimenting them, admiring Ovdei Avodah Zarah, that's the category of Chein, Matnas Chinam, and Chanaya Bekarka. These are the three different elements. The question is, what is the relationship between those three? And this is a question that extends to several applications. When we find exceptions to lotitim amcheim and lotitim lahem matnas chinam, does that also apply to lotitim lahem chanaya bekarka? I'll explain in just a minute. Number one, the first question is, who is being addressed in the pasuk? So if you read the psukim in Parshas Vaschanan, as we just did, it sounds like the Torah is speaking about Shiva Amidim. Right? It says, Osichos Vibris, the Rambam, Moshe Shomim say that refers to Shiva Amidim. The psukim themselves spell out the Shiva Amidim, Hachrimam is certainly referring to Shiva Amidim. The Parsha itself implies that very strongly. Tosfos already raises this question in Avodah Zarah. It says, the Kasha, why don't you say, Dehai, Lo Sechane, B'Sheva, Amlin, Dafka, Tziv, Tziv, V'Nasha, V'Yim, Ravim, according to the Pasuk, Mipanecha, Achiti, Adyagashi, Uksim, Lo Tichos, Embris, V'Lo Sechane, V'Lo Tzchaten, Bam, etc. Tosfos already raised this question. Maybe these prohibitions of Lo Sechane are limited to the Sheva Amlin. But Tosfos answers, "V'yishlomar devadai b'kol hanach kroi ikatam rabba delo matzina lufinu ella bezayin umos." Basically, Tosfos says, not going into details, that when it comes to sichos and bris and hacharein pachrimam, there is good reason to limit it to the seven amavim. However, when it comes to losa chaneim, it applies to nations other than the seven as well. Okay. Beyond the seven, so where do we draw the line in Lo Sechane? Anybody who is not Jewish is included in Lo Sechane? So here, of course, is another possibility, and that is Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And that's the view of most Rishonim. Most Rishonim have the opinion that Ovdei Avodah Zarah at least are included in Lo Sechane. I should mention one exception, and it's possibly Rav Sajigon. Rav Sajigon does not quote Lo Sechane. And Rabbi Ruchel Fishel Perlo suggests that that's because he thinks that Lo Sechaneim is really included already under the rubric of Lo Sichros Lahem Bris. Lo Sichros Lahem Bris, we know, applies only to the Shem Amanim. So the speculation of Rabbi Ruchel Fishel Perlo is that the dinim of Lo Sechaneim, these three halakos, Lo Titin Lahem Chein, Lo Matnaschinam, Chalaya Bekarka, would be limited to Shiva Amin. And Tosfos' question, although Tosfos rejects it, would be the position of Rav Sajigon. That would be very, very important if it were so. Again, it's speculation. But according to most Rishonim, Tosfos and Avodah Zarah, etc., Ovdei Avodah Zarah are included. Now the question is, what does Oved Avodah Zarah mean? This is a question any time you encounter Oved Avodah Zarah. We mean anybody who's not a Jew? Or do we literally mean somebody who is Oved Avodah Zarah? And what does an Oved Avodah Zarah mean as well? A pagan worshiper? A polytheist? Or does it mean even a monotheist who, let's say, believes in unacceptable theological views? Like, for example, from our point of view, the Catholic Church, certainly, their view of the Trinity, from a Jewish point of view, does not constitute Yichud Hashem. From a non-Jewish point of view, that may not be so, but from a Jewish point of view, as for a Jew, that would be Avodah Zarah. Whether or not that's true for Protestants is more of a question. Certainly Islam, as we know, is not a problem of Avodah Zarah in a theological sense. Sometimes Islam is treated together with Avodah Zarah when the issue is one of religious loyalty and betrayal of one's own faith. That's the argument of the Radvaz when it comes to the Arig Vayavar. But certainly when it comes to the matter of theological Avodah Zarah, let's call it, namely, are you involved in the act of Avodah Zarah per se? Of course, Islam, with their belief in the Prophet Muhammad, we have many problems with them. But the issue is not theological, and therefore, when we talk about an Oved Avodah Zarah in the technical sense of the term, generally, Islam, Muslims, are excluded. What is the rule with regard to Lo Sechane? And of course, this is a very crucial issue, because we're talking about selling land in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, if you can't sell it to anybody, in other words, Lo Sechane applies to all non-Jews, then you don't get off the ground in this effort to circumvent Dinei Shvi'is, even if you could justify it. But on the other hand, if you allow Muslims, there are plenty of Muslims in the area, And that obviously would be a huge head. So there's actually debate among the Poskim. The Meiri, of course, is a very famous view about what he calls Adam Hagidur and the Darkei Hadas, but in general, monotheists are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And even Christians, according to the Meiri, when it comes to the issue of Lotita Lehem Matnas Kina, talks about this in that Sugya Avodah Zarah, but it's a general view of the Meiri, is that monotheists are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and therefore Lotita Lehem Matnas Kinam doesn't apply even to Christians. There's a question about how accepted the Meiri's view is. Certainly the Rishonim, it's a minority view, but this is the Meiri's suggestion. The Bach, based on the Kafta Beferach in Kosher Mishpat, suggests that at minimum, again, Muslims would not be included in Lotitein Matnas Chinam. The Beis Yosef in Sinder Resh Mem Tes in Kosher Mishpat disagrees with the Bach and thinks that even Muslims are included in the Easter of Lotita Lehem Matnas Chinam. He says anybody would be included with the exception of a Ger Toshav. The problem is that this Maneda, we don't really have a Ger Toshav. We have people whose conduct, you know, is consistent with that of a Ger Toshav. The question is, even according to the Beis Yosef, do you need formal status of a Ger Toshav, which requires a Bezdin? It only applies to Zman Shehayovel Noheg. It has to be an affirmation in the presence of a Bezdin of some sort. Or does it basically mean one who accepts upon himself Shevnitz Bnei Noach and rejects the Avodah Zarah, meaning it's the code of conduct of the Ger Toshav, rather than the formal status? This is a debate among the Poskim. Again, Rav Kook in particular made the argument that when it comes to issues like Amir Lakum and other such things, Shvisa de Shabbos, there you require, in order to be considered different than any other non-Jew, a formal and legal status of a Ger Toshav. However, which you don't have money. However, when it comes to this matter of Lo Tachanim, both to the Matnas Chinam and Chanaya Bekarka, he argued that perhaps one could rely on the view that even without a legal formal title, Ger Toshav, somebody who accepts the conduct, code of conduct of a Ger Toshav, would not be included in the Yisur of Lo Tachanim. So that's one issue. Just broadly speaking, what is included in the category of Ovid Avodah Zarah here in Los Angeles?
The position that you just cited, is that simply to add on different conditions of the Heter?
Probably.
Likely. So many on the box.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. again, of course, I didn't neglect this mention earlier, but Cook wrote a whole sefer on these topics. Called Shabbos Aretz, which is really a magnificent sefer. Not just on the Hetzer Mechira, much of it is dedicated to the Hetzer Mechira, and then he has an elaboration of all the pratim of Shvi'is as well. Very impressive sefer. There's another suggestion that was made by the those who were not here as well, and that is to make a distinction between an action which is l'hanas atzmo and l'hanas acherim. And this is based, again, on the triple application of Lo Sochane. Chanaya Bekarka, Chein, and Matnas Chinam. It's based really on the Tosefta. The Tosefta, I have it here somewhere, the Tosefta in Avodah Zarah, Tosefta in Avodah Zarah, on the spot, says, V'medvar mamurim, tachmat mositanem matnas chinam, Ba'akum she'ina makiro, o shai over mimakom lamakom. Havlim haya, o havan, o sheino mutar, she'ino ela kimokrolo. So this is a very important rule when it comes to matitan and matnas chinam, especially, holiday time and so on. What does it mean that you're not allowed to give gratuities to a non-Jew? So Tosefta says that's if you're being purely altruistic. But if this is in the context of a relationship that you have with someone, so basically it's self-interest that you give them this matana. It's not really chinam in the broader sense. It's part of a relationship, a web of interaction that you have with them. And therefore, one doesn't have to view that as being chinam. Now, what's fascinating is that the... I'm sorry?
Be able to give charity to somebody begging on the street.
Well, charity is giving a student something else. That's not even mahmas pinam. That doesn't matter. That's, we say, you know, so that doesn't require this. This is more somebody who doesn't need it, but we understand the idea of helping people.
This is a lot about harama.
Harama?
Yeah.
Why is this harama?
Because the Sef was making it clear that doing something like that for somebody else that you know is really for yourself.
It's not a harama. I mean, harama means when you, a subterfuge or a circumvention. There's nothing circumventing or... No, you have a relationship with someone. The point is this. You don't give somebody gratuity. You don't need to give them something for no reason, because then that ends up being kind of an expression of your admiration, you know, for him, in, you know, just, you know, which can be taken to mean the support of his ideology. However, if you have a relationship with somebody, I don't think there's anything cynical about the Tosefta. Tosefta is just saying, you know, if you have a relationship with somebody, and part of that relationship is, you know, to express your akaras atot to him, but that's part of, you know, the ongoing connection that you have, that's not viewed as chinam. It's the gratuitous nature of what you're doing here that is prohibited if there's a good reason for you to be giving them a gift that's no longer gratuity. It doesn't have to be cynical. It could be cynical. It could be that you don't like somebody, you despise them in every way. However, you want to keep them on your good side, you work with them every day, you know, so that he'll annoy you less or that he'll promote you or whatever it is. So you give him a gift, you know, during the holiday. That can be, I don't know if that's cynical either. Maybe that's business as usual. But the Tosefta is not promoting or rejecting that. All the Tosefta is saying, Tosefta is making a totally neutral statement, as far as I'm concerned. He's saying, matnas chinam, right, is defined as something which is truly gratuitous. And the complex relationship that people, you know, have with each other, then, you know, the things that look like chinam in a narrow context are really not chinam at all. But don't be cynical. Either way, it's not a circumvention, it's not a harama, it's just, it's not a suri hana, you know, that I'm, oh, it's a suri hana, but I'm not really getting hana. What the Tosefta is saying is, the Torah's prohibition to begin with is in something that is gratuitous, and this is not. There's nothing, there's no judgment here. Again, the applications could be varied, but it's nothing cynical and there's nothing harama-oriented about this Tosefta. So, because that is true, that's why it's a little problematic in this context. Because, as I said before, Los Achanim refers to three different Yisurim. The Matirim of the Hefer Mechira, we're looking, you know, for different Snifim, you know, Leheter. And they were trying to explain that, you know, there are some flexibility in these issues. In doing that, they tried to call on Lo Titen Lahem Chein and Matnas Chinam, and from sources that are established in those two contexts, and they were trying to, you know, to derive from there what would be the circumstance in Lo Titen Lahem Kanayim Akarka. Again, the issue that we're interested in is follows. If I'm going to sell the land of Eretz Yisrael to my non-Jewish neighbor, right, is that a violation of Lo Sochanim? So, based on the Tosefta, some were arguing, no, because you see that if you do it for your own purposes, it's Moter Lo Sochanim is only if it's outer-directed, not if it's self-interest, and we see this from the Tosefta. But the Tosefta doesn't speak about Lo Sochanim, Lo Titan Mokanai Vakarka. Tosefta speaks about Lo Sochanim, Lo Titan Matnas Chinam. So that raises an important question. Now, in terms of the halakhic process, we don't have time to go into all this, but that's a legitimate at first glance, it's a legitimate approach. But it's also one which always needs to be analyzed, you know, and scrutinized. Namely, if it's the same Yisur, and there are certain qualifications, so it's legitimate for me to ask the question, do these qualifications that are accepted in context A and B, do they also apply to C? Or in A, do they apply to B and C? But then you have to scrutinize and discuss yes or no. So if you understand, maybe this goes back to your question in one form, the question is how you understand the Tosefta. So if you understand the Tosefta to mean that the Iser of Lo Sochanim doesn't apply when there is self-interest, so then Lo Titon Kanoi Bakarka, as part of that Pasuk, could very well include that as well. However, one could understand that the Tosefta is referring to a very specific definition. Name the word chinam, matnas chinam. what the saying is, the way I described it before, which is that it's not truly chinam if you understand it in the context of an ongoing relationship between people. So, you know, there's a lot of quid pro quo, and there's an investment in a relationship. And again, it doesn't have to be cynical. It could be very, very idealistic too. But the point is, if you interpret it that way, so it's not the pshat as some of the matirim suggested, that you see from here, the Isser Lo Sochanim has a heter of hadas atzmo. Rather, it's a special halacha in particularly matnas chinam, which is about chinam. There we say, ein zechinam. But if you talk about kanaya v'karka, it won't apply at all. Yeah.
The very definition of chinam. So if you have, if lo tizem and kanaya v'karka is found in other instances as an expression of zechira v'karka,
right,
then by definition that possessor can't extend.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Nechira can often be... I mean, it is self-motivated, but it doesn't have to be beneficial.
It's never altruistic.
It doesn't have to be altruistic. No one's suggesting that anything less than altruistic. The question is whether or not motivation, whether clear benefits is something which overrides. I mean, there's something in between those two categories. So basically, the question is how to read the Tosafot, essentially. Now, the truth is there were other people who were matir, on this basis, or the Snitlehet, they're on not so much based on the Tosefta, because they recognize that the Tosefta argument is vulnerable, as we just discussed, but because they looked at it from a kind of Talmid Mitzvah point of view. This too is an important methodological issue in Halakha. In other words, if you say, what's the problem of Los Hakonim, Lotitel and Chanoya Bekarka? What is the issue and what is the problem? So if you look at the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvah, and it's even clearer in Ravina B'chayi in Vaeschana, the Zayiya Siba She Yisyashu Sham Ba'aretz Vatora Amra Lo Yeshu Be'artzecha Pen Yachdiyo Eschali. Basically, the problem of Osachanim is that you don't want foreign influences, right? You don't want someone to corrupt, which is why the main parsha is about Shiva Amamim. And even if you argue this particular point extends beyond Shiva Amamim, but the idea of Shiva Amamim concept. Namely, we're struggling to impose a certain ideal value system, right, in connection with our return to Eretz Yisrael. And the point is, this is all going to be jeopardized by the presence of influences which, you know, tend to corrupt that. But, if that's the point, don't give them a foothold, so then you'll argue that, well, but what I'm doing is what allows me to survive and build, right, the Yeshiva of Eretz Yisrael. So that's more of it's the argument of based on self-interest, but it's not based on the Tosefta, it's based on the, let's say, neutralizing the Tanya Mitzvah of the Yisra, yeah.
Right, and to equate Chanayah with the Chira is not obvious. If the Mishnah didn't do that, you would have, a better way out in this way, because the Mechira, Hetzer Mechira, doesn't actually allow non-Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael who otherwise work.
Well, that's a question too. So that's another point, we'll just add that. That was one of Rav Kook's suggestions. Rav Kook said you could sell the land, and again, a lot of these are sneaking lands that go together, but he said you could sell the land to a non-Jew who already has a piece of the land. And that's not so obvious, right? In other words, if it's
against the Pashut Shah of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you can't sell, right?
Right. Mishnah says you can't sell. All things being equal, you shouldn't sell. Everybody will agree with that. But here we're talking about, you know, selling en masse, you know, to promote rather than to detract from the, you know, the din of Yishuv Eretz. So that's the irony here. So it's a double irony. I mean, it goes back on itself too. And, you know, can you do this in order to promote? So the point is, whatever Cook suggested was, Lasita Lahem Chanaya, don't give them an encampment. But if they already have an encampment, then he already owns a couple of dunam, or whatever the proper expression is. So to him, basically, you're just, you know, it's a quantitative increase of his holding, but you're not giving him a hold in the land, especially, again, if you take the Talmid Mitzvot aspect of it, which is, he's there. So you haven't increased foreign influence in the land. Yeah. Yeah.
just because he's there,
right,
he has, let's say, 5%, this is a Gentile on 5% of the land.
Yeah.
If you give him another 10% of earth, 95%, that means that we're not there, then he's there.
Right. Well, we have said this is all temporary, and this is all just
it's
to...
It's temporary,
right.
That's just an argument.
Right.
But if you say that it's not Kamiya, I can't see it, because here is a furthering of the Gentile wrestling, and it's a trash of the Jewish ownership.
Well, there's a difference between ownership, and there definitely is an increase, technically, legally, in the degree of ownership. The question is whether there is an influence, if there's a degree of influence. And this is, again, this is a circumvention, remember. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just trying to survey some of the arguments so that you'll understand the... you'll understand some of the issues. Another suggestion that was made along these lines... again, these are all vulnerable to disagreement. This was the debate. Was the question of Mechira L'Zman Katzuv, which, again, goes to part of your question, too. So you get temporary sale. Do you sell the land and then you rebuy it? So, you know, almost like Mechira's comments. But can you build in the temporary nature of the sale? Can you do that or not? So that is a double question. Obviously, in terms of some of the concerns of Lokitul and Chandaya Bekarka, right, if you can, if it's a mechira l'zman katzuv, if it's a temporary sale, maybe that's not a problem, that's not considered chanaya. By definition, it's not permanent. And in terms of the tamei mitzvos as well, in terms of the influence, the corrupting influence, or simply a foreign influence, however you want to formulate it, the fact is that you've built in the limitation of that impact. The problem is twofold. Number one, is a mechira l'zman katzuv really a mechira? Or is it just chiros? That's a debate that that we find in a number of Gemaras, and it's a discussion of the Rishonim. For example, in terms of other such things, where you require technically mechira, not simply chiros, is mechira l'zman katzuv renting, or is it really a full sale? Do you require a resale? Does it just go back? It has the model of Matana Amanat Lahakzir in a way. So this is one part of the discussion. Again, time doesn't... And you have to skip to the second part in a second anyway. That's one issue. The other question is, even if you were to accept the position that a Mechira L'zman Katzuv Shema Mechira, right, you still have to ask, the second question, which is, you're walking a very fine line. Because... if indeed it's not the kind of mechira which triggers the isur of latitul and chanaya b'karka, maybe it's also not the kind of mechira which would accomplish your goal, which is l'hafkiya kedushas haaretz. Can you really find that fine balance between hafkas kedushas mechira l'inyan zeh, but it's not. It's possible because again, latitul and chanaya b'karka, the pasuk of say l'kimkar. So if you say, legally, it's a full sale. The built-in obsolescence of this ownership, it means it's not chanaya. That would be the argument, and that's how some poskim suggested. Some poskim suggested another idea, and that is, the Mishnah says that you can sell a manas lakutz, right? So you can sell with the condition that they're going to cut down the trees or whatever, so it would be... the chuba that you're selling, it'll be polish. So in the shtar, in many of the shtar mechiras, of the hetzer mechira, they sold almanas lakutz with the condition that if they didn't do the lakutz, which they weren't going to, not going to knock down the houses, and you're not going to knock down all the trees, obviously, we would want them to anyway, but then automatically it turns into a mechira l'zman katzuv instead of a real mechira. That was a patent, I guess, in order to accomplish two things. Number one, but originally it's a mechira slatavish. When it obviously triggers the mechira l'zman katzuv, so you didn't do that, he did it. In other words, by not fulfilling the primary agreement, so this kind of shifted the nature of the transaction, but that was something that was accomplished by the non-Jews. Lack of compliance, I guess, with the primary plan, and therefore it doesn't trigger an Isur for the Jew. That was the argument of some of the, I think it was Rabbi Yitzchak Kahn's idea, and that was, I think, a clause in the, I don't know if it still is, but that was a clause in the Hetzer Mechira.
Why isn't that a denial that wasn't fulfilled and canceled the whole thing?
Well, no, we don't want to cancel the whole thing because it was set up as a subterfuge in a way.
But
it was set up. We want the Mechira to go through, but we don't want the Jews to be the ones who are initiating it. We want it to be the decision of the non-Jew to trigger that second phase. So, you know, if you sell Amanas Lakutz, which the Mishnah says is fine, right? And with the condition that if you don't do it by X amount of time, then that triggers, you know, a Mechira Lizman Katsuv instead. So what we're saying is the original Mice and Mechira, again, those who argued said, no, it's too clever. You just break, what you're saying, break it down into, well, not exactly what you said, but break it down into two different transactions, both of which has its source in the original, Mocher's decision. But the, again, it's a sniff lahat there because they were concerned about all these issues. They thought, it doesn't hurt. Let's try to do it this way. Maybe that takes the act away from the Jew. Anyways, these are some of the issues that go into the question of Mechira, whether there's an Easter Mechira or a Heter Mechira. That's what is the impact of Lo Sukhanim, Lo Titim and Chanoya of the Karka, when it comes to L'Shem Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Chazanish argued that this question was really potentially at least a very crucial question. But on the surface, the question of whether you violate Lo Sukhanim is an important issue, because we don't want to violate any surim of the Torah. But even if you violate Lo Sukhanim, on the surface, the Mechira goes through. Because if you sold something, you sold it. But Lo Sukhanim doesn't mean that ain't Mechira, so Mechira. It just means that you violate Lo Sukhanim, which is bad enough. However, the Chazanish raised the question, if you have a Shliach who is representing Medinat Yisrael or whatever it is, whatever entity, in the context of this Mechira, and it's a violation of Lo Sukhanim, maybe you should apply the rule of Ein Shliach Udvar Aveira. Ein Shliach Udvar Aveira, there's a famous debate among the Rishonim, Tudeus and Tosus and Bab Mitzia, among others, whether or not Ein Shliach Udvar Aveira means that the Shlichus doesn't go through. Or it's just a question of, who bears the responsibility, Dibra Rav, Dibra Talmud, Dibra Mishonim. That seems to be two views of Tosus and Bab Mitzia. This is a point that the concern that the Chazanish raised, which is that, it's very nice to try to circumvent Lo Sukhanim, but, if you haven't succeeded, it's not just the violation of Lo Sukhanim that you have to worry about. Maybe the whole Mechira is Betela. The whole Mechira is Betela, then you're back to square one. You may think that you have a working Heter Mechira, even a problematic one, but you don't. That's an important issue.
Definitely, if Shlichus is the mechanism in which the
Mechira
takes place.
Say it again?
That only if Shlichus is the mechanism.
Yeah, that's what he said. If in the case of the Dinas Yisrael, so you have to have somebody who's representing all the people and the government.
Shlichus, though. In other words, is that really Shlichus?
Well, there's no, that's a question, too, but, it's very reasonable to say that, because you don't have all Yisrael coming together. So on some level you have...
In the governmental relationship, is that a form of Shlichus?
Right. And is it, but also who's doing it for the government?
Right.
And is the government itself a Shlichus?
Is there a
that's an issue. Certainly in the time before Medinat Yisrael, when this is also a question, of course, before 1948, so then it certainly had to be somebody who's representing, Karen Kayemeth or whoever it was. If you have each individual owner, that's not a very efficient way to do it. That's how that happened. They never did it then. It was just, they had to do it on a more, national level. In theory, you could do it that way. Okay. That's one issue. That's one part of the question, and there's much more to say about it, of course, but obviously you can see what some of the issues are. There's a bigger question, actually, which we don't have as much time for. Maybe another time we'll continue, but let me hit some of the issues, at least. There's the question of the effect of the Mechir. Does it really work or not? And this involves us with the question of the impact of non-Jewish ownership of land in Eretz Yisrael. Now, this is a general issue. There's a very famous tshuva of the Beis Yosef, which the Mabit sharply attacked. Tshuva of the Beis Yosef in the Avkas Rochel. The question is how to read a certain sifra. But the sifra, in Parshas Bahar, what does that mean? So the Rashi Mishnah and the Ravid say that it means she'ein nosim heroshvius lanachri apil lachila and ain't no skiro lekita. Meaning you're not allowed to give heroshvius to a non-Jew. After all, they have to be dealt with the kedusha. I mentioned before sending them out to chutzlart is an issue. Biur the kedusha giving to a non-Jew. According to the Rashi and the Ravid, that's the meaning of the sifra. The Beis Yosef had a different understanding, and that was that this line of the sifra, lachem, v'lo lacherim, means that non-Jewish ownership of the land, when it comes to shvius, undercuts kedusha shvius. That's a tremendous kula. Therefore, according to the Beis Yosef, it's possible that the issue of non-Jewish ownership, when it comes to shvita, is disentangled from the bigger question of the impact of non-Jewish ownership on Kedushas Haaretz. Those who disagree think that it is part of that bigger question. That bigger question is an issue that we find in a number of Gemaras, most particularly famous Gemara in Gittin, Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Here the Gemara speaks about this question, Yesh kinen akum lahavkia mikedushas haaretz, or ein kinen akum lahavkia mikedushas haaretz. I know I have the text here somewhere. The Gemara says in Gittin that this is a debate. Mishnah speaks about Mokras Fadeh Lo Mekachavi Lo Kecha Maybe Bikurim Fadeh Tikkuno. Amar Rava Avu Bishen Kinen Akum Bar Tishal Lavkim De Meister Shemar Ki Li Aretz Li Kedushas Aretz Vayesh Kinen Akum Ber Tishal Lachba Bavor Shichu Numa Aretz. The Gemara explains that they argue on the word digoncha. The Torah says digoncha, lo digan akum. Mar savar diguncha, the lo digun ove kochav. So basically, you have this interesting machlokas whether or not the ownership of a non-Jew of the land of Eretz Yisrael affects Kedushas, Peros, Shvius, or not. Here you have another major argument, seems to be at least an argument, between Rashi and the Rambam. I won't read it inside because it's a little too late already, but the Rambam in Perek Aleph of Truma Talacha Yud explains that, actually, if it's too good a line, I'll have to read it last. Let's read it very quickly. Goyish HaKana Karka Be'eretz Yisrael, a non-Jew who owns land in Eretz Yisrael, lo hefkia min ha-mitzvos, he does not neutralize the sanctity of the karka with regard to mitzvos, ha-rei b'kdushasa. L'fika chemchazer yisrael v'lo kal mimenu, eino kikibus yachid, and l'mafesh trumos v'marshus v'megi bikurim v'akom in ha-tari ki lo nimka l'goy me'ola. So basically, the Rambam says something very, very fascinating here. The Rambam says, how do we paskin? Yesh kinenakum lavkia miharetz or not? The Rambam says we paskin, ein kinenakum lavkia mikedushas haaretz. Non-Jewish ownership does not neutralize kedushas haaretz. The impact of this on Shemitah we'll just hold off on for a minute. We're not finished with that yet, but just let me make one point before that. The Rambam says, therefore, since we don't accept the view that non-Jewish ownership neutralizes kedushas haaretz, therefore, if you reacquire the land that was being controlled, owned by a non-Jew, it's not considered a kibush yachid, right? And therefore, anything that grows subsequently will be chayav trumas maitras, like any other land of Eretz Yisrael. Meaning that the Rambam felt that if you held yesh kinenakum afkim kedushas haaretz, the non-Jewish ownership neutralized Kedushas Haaretz, what that would mean would be that when you rebuy the land, it's like Kibbutz Yachid, like Surya, the Aram Tova, which means that it would never be able to be fully invested again with the Kedushas Haaretz Daraisa. That's a remarkable rub. If you look at Rashi and Gittin, when Rashi explains Yesh Kin and Akum Lavkim and Kedushas Haaretz, so Rashi focuses on Peros. In Kona Akum Karka Eretz Yisrael, Ein Kinyano Kanoi Lavkim and Kedushas Haaretz, Shalot Tishayev, the Meiser, Yisrael Akonu the Menu and Peros, Tzarek La'aser, meaning what impact does non-Jewish ownership have in neutralizing, what do you mean neutralizing Kedushas Haaretz? Meaning, the fruit, the Tzvua that grows under his aegis, does not have Kedushas Haaretz. But that doesn't mean that if I reacquire the property, that it's Kibush Yachid. In other words, there seems to be a major debate between Rambam and Rashi about the scope of the halakha, Yesh Kin and Akum, Lahafkia. Now this is very important for the following reason, in both directions. Shemitah, get practical for a moment, Shemitah, Rashi says that Kin and Akum Lahafkia Mikdush Saret affects the Peros, the Kibush of Peros, but it says nothing about it obtaining the status of Kibush Yachid when you repurchase it. I mean, it doesn't neutralize Kibush Haaretz, basically.
So
what's
Sorry? So what is the machlokes between Rashi and Rambam?
The Rambam says that Kinyan Akum Mavkiyah, if it would be Mavkiyah, would it be of such a nature that it almost... It's like it's not Eretz Yisrael anymore.
Right. He's saying that it's... But he said...
But we don't, because we don't pass it now. We paskin ain't kin in Akum
Lavkia. But the Rambam also passes.
That's how the Rambam passes. Okay.
So how is it different than Rashi?
Okay. So the answer is as follows. Number one, well, let's get back to our question of Shemitah. We want to know if you can sell, if you can get out, if you can get past the problem of Lo Sachanim, does the sale accomplish the goal of neutralizing Dinei Shemitah? Yes or no? So I mentioned the Beis Yosef has a special halacha in Shviyas based on the Sifra, right, the Lola here. That's one issue. But according to most poskim, the issue depends on the sugya of Yesh Kin and Akum Lavkia Mikdushas Haaretz. Now, that's a Gemara in Gittin. And the truth is that Gemara is speaking about Bikurin, it speaks about Maestras, doesn't speak specifically about Shviyas at all. However, Rashi in Sanhedrin, famous Gemara in Sanhedrin, which I'm not going to read right now, but the Gemara is headed off Kavavim and Aleph. The Gemara tells a certain story about Reish Lakish, and he wanted to go with some other Rabbanim to be Ma'aber as Lashana. He said, I'll tag along, I'll see how they do it. On the way, they kept meeting all these people, the Shnat HaShemitah. They kept meeting people who were doing questionable things in their karka, and every time he would be very upset. Reish Lakish said, oh, you know, this guy out there, look at him, he's violating Shias. And all the Chachanim with him kept trying to be Malam, but it's close. It's a very fascinating Gemara. So they sat down with one guy, he's working in the karka, this Jew, and Reish Lakish said, look at this guy, you know, Cohen the Zamir, terrible. So the other two said to him, maybe you could say, Adhistan on Iba Socha, maybe he's not working his land, maybe he's working the non-Jewish land. That's what Rashi explains, Rashi in Sanhedrin. Rashi's meaning, in the non-Jewish land, it's not a violation of Shvius. The Tulsa says, about Yesh Kenanakum Lafkiya Mikdusha Sahara. So what if it's a non-Jewish land? We paskin that that Jewish ownership doesn't undercut the sanctity of the land. The Tulsa doesn't know what to do with the Rashi. Tulsa in Gittin on some face of knowledge says, maybe this man the Amar holds Yesh Kenanakum Lafkiya Mikdusha Sahara. Right? However, the Achronim ask a very important question. So number one, let's say that were true.
This is a passionate
in Sanhedrin. Now we have to ask ourselves, is that enough? Let's say there's somebody who holds an Yeshkin and Akum Lafkiya Mikdushas Haaretz. But the Gemara applies it to Bikurim and to Maestros. Does it apply to Shviyas? Necessarily? Well, what's the difference? But number one, the Tzukim, the Gancha, the Guncha, are talking about Trumas and Maestros. But number two, this is very important for the practical issue, there are two types of prohibitions or issues in Shvius. I mentioned before. One is the Avodas HaKarka, and the other is the Peros. Right, the Peros have to be treated, they have certain conditions of Shvius, and they have to be treated as such. No Skora, no Vizis, Chutzlaret, Akum, Biyur, all these Dinim. But you're also not allowed to do a Avodas of HaKarka. Zriya, Zmira, Ktsira, Vitsira. You're not allowed to do that. So somebody I've heard him ask, even if Yesh Kin and Akum Lafkiya Mikdushas Haaretz, maybe that's limited to Kedushas Peros. That doesn't mean that the karka isn't kadosh, right? Or maybe that depends on the machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam, according to the Manamar Yishkin and Akum Lafiyah. In other words, according to the Rambam, it seems like when the non-Jew owns the land, there's no Kedushas Haaretz practically at all. It would be like Kibbutz Yochid when you reacquire it. So then, it makes sense that the scope of the tour would be greater. Maybe even to the Avodah Sakarka. Now the case from Sanhedrin, which is what bothered all the Achronim there, Esalevi and others, is Cohen the Zomir. What he saw the guy doing was Avodah Sakarka. So just because the Avodah Sakarka tells us that, well, maybe he held Yesh Kinanakum. So Yesh Kinanakum, does that real A, does it apply to Shvias? B, even if it does, maybe it only applies to Kedushas Peros Shvias, not necessarily to Avodah Sakarka.
Obviously, the other Amorim who said that, the Amorim that were with Reish Lakish,
not just held
that Yesh Kinyan, and that it also applied to the Karka.
That seems to be...
Take it seriously, take what they said.
So basically, the way that the Beis Halevi and others, many of them, answer the question is, they say Rashi and that Gemara is Lashitas. This is where we come to the crux of the issue. We won't have so much time to develop it, but Rashi and Lashitas, because Rashi, that same Gemara in Sanhedrin, explains earlier in the Gemara, says that Puku Mizaru Bishviyas. They were told at some point they had like a heavy tax burden, and they were told, okay, you can work the land and Shvias. How could you do such a thing? So they said, because, so Rashi explains, well, that Gemara is according to the Bandamar, who says that Shvias, Bizman HaZeh, is only Drabon. Since it's Drabonon, so it was a bit of a Sakana, or it wasn't Sakana, but it was on Sakana, whatever it was, they were Mekil as a result. So the Beis Halevi says the following. Other quotes say part of it, Beis Halevi says more. Says as follows. Basically, you have the following problem. Let's back up for one more second. Rashi there in Sanhedrin seemed to be saying that if Yeshkin and Akum, Lafia, Kedushas Haaretz, if you take Moses' view, that will apply to Shvias, and it'll apply to Avodah Sakarka. Both elements that are not obvious. I should add, if you look at the Gemara in Yevamos, Kuf Chavtes Lamedes, there Rashi seems to interpret the Gemara that Kinyanakum doesn't help you for Avodah Sakarka. And maybe it doesn't help you for Shvias at all. However, what the Achronim suggested was the Rashi in Sanhedrin is already operating with the view that Shvias is Drabanan. And if Shvias is Drabanan, so then some very critical other element to consider. That is the Gemara in Gittin, Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, records the debate. By Yesh Kinyan Akum Lafkiya Mekdushas Haaretz, or Ein Kinyan Akum Lafkiya Mekdushas Haaretz. So the Gemara says, that's all very well and good for the regular boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. However, Surya was a part of the land that was, the Gemara calls it Kibush Yachid. Now why it was called Kibush Yachid is a debate in the Rishonim, but it wasn't conquered in the right order, or with the right measure of authority. Therefore, Surya has a status of Kedushas Haaretz only Drabanan. So the Gemara says, even if you hold Ein Kinyan Akum Lafkiya Mekdushas Haaretz, non-Jewish ownership doesn't destroy the Kedusha. However, when it comes to Surya is different. Ache b'may askina b'Surya, the kasava kibush yachid lo shmei kibush. In Surya, Kinyan Akum is Mafkiya. And if you look at the Rambam that I mentioned before, Tarek Aleph Halacha Yud, the Rambam says this as well. Yesh kinyan the gods of Surya lafkiya min ha-maitros u-min ha-shviyas. He has the word shviyas, actually. Kemoshi's bar. Earlier he spoke about Mikol ha-mitzvos. Now he speaks about shviyas. So what's going on? So the proponents of the Hetzer Mechira, basically, I'm sorry I can't do justice to this, but in this complexity, but the proponents of the Hetzer Mechira basically said as follows. We paskin ein kinyan akum lafkiya min kedushas haaretz. However, we paskin yesh kinyan akum lafkiya min kedushas haaretz b'Surya. What is Surya? Kibush yachid. If you look at Rashi, in Gittin, then Zion, Rashi explains, demaisa didal midrabanan. So the proponents of the Hetzer Mechira have always argued that basically, Shvius Bismana Zed Rabbanan is the equivalent of Suri. And therefore, Yeshkin and Akum Lahapki. Just one more second. The Beit HaLevi went one step beyond and then one step back. And this is his argument. He said, if that's the case, maybe Rashi and Sanhedrin would be tough on the following way. When we talk about Yeshkin and Akum, the Man Mamre says Yeshkin and Akum Lahapki of Eretz Yisrael, Mikdusha, right? And then we're being told that Lahalacha, we don't pass in that way, but in Surya, it works. Correct? So the question is as follows. Is it the same level of impact, the same scope, the Kinyan Akum Lahapkiya? We mentioned before that there seems to be a debate whether the Kinyan Akum Lahapkiya refers to Kedusha Fa'aret or Kedusha Peros. Right? Debate seems to be a debate between Rashi and the Rabbi. I should add that according to the Rambam, it's also possible, since the Rambam says that Yeshkin and Akum Lahapkiya means the whole land would have been like a kibbutz yachid when you reacquired it, it opens the question, it's not clear, but it opens the question, does Rashi think, however, that with regard to Kedushas Peros, even according to that Manda Amar, it works? Does Yeshkin and Akum Lahapkiya to make it a kibbutz yachid, but maybe at least the Peros part works? That's a question. A discussion on the Achron. Let's take a step further. We have this debate. Does it affect the Karka or the Peros? So the Beit HaLevi said something ingenious. He said, listen, Rashi seems to be extending the impact of Kinyan Akum beyond what he thinks of it applies in Yavamos and in other places. How could that be? So he says the answer is because Rashi is Lashitasa. Rashi in Sanhedrin says that Shvius Bismana Zed Rabbana. And why is Shvius Bismana Zed Rabbanan? Because we paskin that Kedusha Shnia, the time of Ezra, was Batel. Kitzel Shaita, below Kitzel Yasuba. In other words, the Kedusha of Yoshua, Kibush Sha'aretz, that ended when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And the Kedusha Shnia of Ezra, that ended when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So if that's the case, Beis HaLevi said, so then, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Shvius Bismana Zeh, no Kedushas Haaretz is the equivalent of Surya. But in Surya, maybe, it's not just that we paskin Yeshkin and Akum Lahapkiya. The Kinyan Akum is more powerful in Surya than it ever would have been in Eretz Yisrael, even according to the Man D'Amar, Yeshkin and Akum Lahapkiya. Why? So this is the Beit HaLevi's great idea. He says, because after all, in Eretz Yisrael, you have to overcome objective, we call it ontic, Kedusha Fa'aretz. I mean, you have Kedusha Fa'aretz. Another question is, what impact is Kinyan Akum going to have? So there you might say, you know what? Even if it has it, what, it's going to take away the status of Eretz Yisrael and full Kedusha? No, it affects the payros that grow during the sovereignty of the non-Jew. But look at Suyar. The reason we're able to say that in Surya is Kinyan Akum is not only because it's Ravana, but because there's no real Kedusha Fa'aretz. So you have the power of Kinyan Akum, right, that needs not overcome the counter pressure of Kedusha Fa'aretz. So therefore, not only does it works even for Rashi in a way that transcends the way it ever would have worked according to the Man D'Amar, is Kinyan Akum, Lahapkiya, Kedusha Fa'aretz. So therefore, what it'll do is not only allow you to eat the Peros, it'll allow you to work Karka too. Not only will it apply to Meiser, it will apply to Shvius. That's the Beit HaLevi's argument. So the Beit HaLevi said, but if that's the case, he says, that's why I oppose the Mechira. Why? Because, he says, now we have to ask ourselves, is it really true that Shvius is Manazez Rabbana, number one? That's a debate among themselves. I was going to discuss that, but we were out of time. In the Rambam, it's particularly a big issue, because the Rambam in one place, Paragdalat was Shmita Halacha Chafei, seems to say that Shmita is knowing Vegas Ne'abayas Ben Shalom. Ne'abayas, the Kesef Mishnah took that to mean that Shmita is the right for the Marazah. The Rambam also paskins that Kedusha Shnia fully applies, not Batel. However, there are also two other Rambams, later in Ilkos Shmita V'Yovel, in Paragdalat, Tess Halakha Beis and Perikin Halakha Tess, but the Rambam seems to say that Shemitah depends on Yovel, and there's no Yovel, there's Marazeh. That's a big debate how to read those Rambams. Okay. But the Beis HaLevi said, listen, even if you hold that Shemitah Bezman HaZeh's Rabbanan, which is questionable, if it's the right, so then you haven't accomplished anything. If it's Rabbanan, right? So now the question is, why is it Rabbanan? Rashi said it was Rabbanan because Kedusha Shnia was Batel. But even if it's Rabbanan for the Rambam, it may be Rabbanan for a different reason. Namely, the Rambam at the very end of the first parak of Hilchos Truma drops a bomb. There's no time to discuss it now in any kind of detail. But the Rambam says, if you look at Hilchos Beis HaBechira, and if you look at Hilchos Trumos, the Rambam says, Kedusha Shmiah of Ezra, Kai Bekai, is yours. Why more than Yoshua? Different question, but that's a fact. However, the Rambam says, in the last halacha, like 20 halachas later, in Hilchos Trumos, the Rambam drops the bomb. He says, oh, I forgot to mention. He doesn't say, I forgot to mention. He says, by the way, Trumos is Marazeh, and yearly, Maestros is only Rabbanan. I mean, he's been saying all along that Kedusha Shni of Ezra is Araisa. The answer is because there's no B.S. Kolka. Because when Ezra returned, he didn't bring the multitudes of Chal Yisrael with him. And therefore, with regard to Chala, the Gemara says about Chala, and the Rambam says, I think Truma, and yearly, maybe even Maestros, it's all Rabbanan. Rav Chaim and his father, the Beis HaLevi, are both of the opinion that Shemitah for the Rambam is Rabbanan also because of the lack of B.S. Kolka. Not a simple matter at all. Not an agreed upon proposition. That was their view. So now the question is, Shvius Nisman HaZeh is Rabbanan, let's say, but is it like Surya? What's the charm of Surya? That there's no real Kedushas HaAretz. Not just that it's Rabbanan. This is the Beis HaLevi's big ha'ara. Beis HaLevi said, I'll prove it to you. Yerokos, vegetables, are only chayv the maestros midrabban. Did anybody ever say that yesh kidinakum lafdia mikdushas yerokos mimaestros drabbanan? Now, is the equation of Surya anything that is drabbanan yesh kidinakum lafdia so maestros midrabbanan? No. The idea of Surya is kedushas ha'aretz or no kedushas ha'aretz. If that's the case, so if you say Kedusha Shnia is Batel, that means no Kedusha Saharetz. But let's say you say Kedusha Saharetz is Chai V'Kayam, but the reason that there's no Trumas and Maestros and Shviyas, let's say, for argument's sake, is no B.S. Kolchem. So now you have to ask yourself, is B.S. Kolchem an extraneous requirement, which is Ma'ake, Shmita, or Maestros, or Truma Daraisa, or does it mean lack of B.S. Kolchem is an incomplete or lack of Kedusha Saharetz? So that's what the Beis HaLevi said. In his opinion, B.S. Kolchem is a side problem. But there is Kedushas HaAretz. So even if Shemitah Bezman HaZeh's Daraisa is Rabbanan, is it like Surya? No. If it's not like Surya, then Ein Kidinakum Lafkia. However, Rav Chaim, we're just not going to conclude. Oh, it's going to be 2 more minutes. Rav Chaim, in his Chibur, in Hilchos Shemitah, and in Hilchos Trumos, has a different take on B.S. Kolchem. Rav Chaim argued that B.S. Kolchem is not just an extraneous tour. Oh, they didn't happen to all come back for the majority, and therefore, Rav Chaim argued that basically there's a difference between two demons. The demon Yovel of Kol Yoshevel Aleha, which Rav Chaim thought depends on every particular Yovel. Each Yovel we can assess anew. Does Rav call Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael call Yoshevel Aleha or not? It's a din in Kiyum Yovos. It's not a din in Kedushas HaAretz. However, B.S. Kolchem, he thought, depended on the initiation of the Kedusha when Kal Yisrael returned to Eretz Yisrael. And at the time of Ezra, they just didn't return in proper numbers. And therefore, forever, that Kedusha is limited. There's no B.S. Kolchem. Because B.S. Kolchem is a din in Kedushas HaAretz itself. The Hashkafic implications are very, very strong here. The relationship between how Kal Yisrael responds and what impact that has on Kedushas HaAretz, but that's for another time. Therefore, the Rav used to point out that if you apply the Beis HaLevi's thesis about the difference in the nature of Surya and the relationship between Surya and Shvius Bezman HaZed Rabbanan, the rights of Rabbanan, and you apply Rav Chaim's idea of B.S. Kolchem, you might be able to justify the Hetzer Mechira again. Because if B.S. Kolchem is really a lack of Kedushas HaAretz, so then Shvius Bezman HaZeh Rabbanan would be like Surya. And if it would be like Surya, then BH Kenyanakum Bahatkiya. However, I think the matter is really not so simple. It's complicated. The fact that the Rambam waits 20-odd halakhos till the end of the first paragraph of Hilchos Trumos, to me, indicates that Bias Kolchem doesn't completely negate Ezra's Kedusha. Now, maybe somewhere in between. It's a little more complicated. In other words, Kedusha Shnia is Chai V'Kayim. That has to be relevant for something, because otherwise Rambam would have to say from here in the beginning of Hilchos Trumos wouldn't tell it to us and leave us in the dark until he drops the other shoe in the last halakha of Parakal of Hilchos Trumos. At the same time, Rav Chaim is a strong argument. So basically, it seems like Bias Kolchem is something in between. So it affects the intensity of Kedushas Haaretz, but it doesn't exactly negate it either. And there could be an opinion which I can't go into. In which case, we can understand some of the different epics who explain the Kura and Shulchan Aruch, who also seem to have contradictory perspectives on this issue. This is just part of the discussion of the nature of Shias. I just want to end with one sense of guidance and direction. Again, we discussed three issues here. One is whether there's a hetzer to sell the land. B, what impact selling the land has. I think we've shown that the first two issues are very complicated. There are arguments lechan ulechan for being able to sell the land under circumstances that justify it. And there are also arguments that make it clear that this is a concession and a compromise which we would like to avoid as much as possible. The second issue is even more important, namely what impact selling the land has. It's a matter of great controversy. The relationship between Surya and Shvius Bizman HaZeh Drabanan, and the basis for that Drabanan and understanding the nature of that Drabanan, obviously these are complicated issues. Much has changed since the 19th century when the issue began. Medina Israel today is much more self-sufficient, much more economically viable. There's a debate among, I think, economists and others, to what extent this really is necessary to have a Heter Mechira from a purely economic point of view, this Zman Hazeh. Certainly the need is far less urgent than it was in the 19th century. However, at the same time, there's another issue that has replaced it, but come more to the fore, and that is the nature of the population of Eretz Yisrael. The fact is that secular Israel is certainly not committed to the dinam of Kedushas Shvius or Avodas HaKarka, and the potential for mikshol when there is no Hetzer Mechira, even if it's not justified as much on economic terms, is undoubtedly, at least from my point of view, a reason enough that there has to be some sort of Hetzer Mechira for those who require it and who need it, for those who otherwise will be nikshal, albeit through their own lack of interest or awareness, or in some cases sensitivity. This year, the whole Hetzer Mechira issue has been complicated by the fact the first time that the chief rabbinate did not do a across-the-board Hetzer Mechira. I think the compromise in the end, which I don't really understand, was to leave it to each city or each community, which is a hodgepodge, and then makes, from what I'm told, makes things very difficult in Eretz Yisrael. Again, from the perspective of the ideal and the values, as much as possible, we should work towards, I think, supporting those who do not rely on the Hetzer Mechira. Even if we were to be fully confident that it was effective in all ways, which is debatable, simply asserting the ideal of Shabbos Haaretz, Kiliya Haaretz, Likdushas Haaretz, and everything that goes with it, as I described at the outset, would militate that we'd be very supportive of those people who do make the sacrifices, in some cases very significant sacrifices, in order to be able to achieve Shvius in its ideal. At the same time, I think we should also be supportive of there being a Hetzer Mechira for the people that need it, and especially, I say, for large segments of the country, without it, who are just going to violate, no matter what, Dinei Shvius. Better that it be in place, better not be in place. And to the extent that we can be supportive of there being a Mechira and yet not relying on it, we don't have to, I think that is the best policy. In terms of one other issue, there's a debate between the Rishonim about the Yisur Meshumar. What happens if you eat Perishvias, but Perishvias which were treated as individual ownership during that year? Most are certainly of the opinion that there's no violation, which means that if you rely on the Hetzer Mechira and it doesn't work, in a way, as long as you eat the Peros Shvias V'Kedusha, even if you don't like, in terms of the question of Kedusha Shvias and the Peros, one would be covered. There is, however, the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, who says that Meshumar is prohibited. The Chazon Ish, for one, was not Makbid for Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, but Meshumar. The Rav thought that should be Makbid for Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, but he thought it was more of an Isur Gabra than an Isur Chafza, that somebody who acts as if he is an owner of his own karka and is not mafkir of Peros Shvias, he's not allowed to eat those Peros, but it doesn't come under the category of Makolas Asuros. That's an important issue as well. My time is up. I just wanted to conclude just by reading a line from one of Rav Kook's letters. I mentioned before that Rav Kook was a staunch advocate of the Hetzer Mechira, and yet, it's not surprising, as I say, he felt with as much passion as anyone else the urgency of returning to the ideal of Shemitah observance in a maximal way. And he wrote in one of his zikros, "Vashem yizvarchi rachem alamo v'yartso me'era, v'yachbos shlishvurei levav ha'mechutzim v'machatz keiv nara al matzav ha'madiv shel Eretz HaKodesh v'yoshea." Of course, the matzav keiv nara and madiv of his time was different than the matzav keiv nara and madiv of our time, but unfortunately, the terms apply, albeit for different reasons. Hameikli kaneis the pirtos the chukos keilu. The ite neher of the tzion yeshuas Yisrael tefarto v'nisab ramah degel tarasenu hakdasha v'kiyum komitz mosel. U'bukalon ha-mitzis ha-tliyas ha-aretz v'chal u'ktushas shabbos ha-aretz v'frat ha-admas ha-kodesh. The simchas lev kol ovi Hashem ha-mitzabim l'yeshuas ha-emes. And all I can say is, kein yihi rotzon. Thank you.
If the Mechira does work, is there any point to people acting the keeping it?
Well, not, I mean, if it really, really doesn't have Kedusha Shvias, then no. But because we can, what I'm saying is, that's why it's better if we're capable to eat things that are